Hey there, welcome to the Creative Classroom Podcast. I'm your host, John Spencer. I'm a former middle school teacher. I'm a current college professor, and I am passionate about seeing teachers transform their classrooms into bastions of creativity and wonder. And so that's what we explore on this podcast. I share strategies and tips. I tell stories. I share ideas. I interview some of the best experts in the field because I really believe that teachers play a vital role and helping students reach their creative potential. And before we get started today, I want to share a word from our sponsor, Defined Learning. So, teachers, if you're looking for inspiring project-based lessons for K-12 students, I encourage you to take a look at the PBL tools and resources on Defined Learning. Defined Learning offers an online library of engaging standard-aligned projects, inspiring career-focused videos, research resources, and more to help you create deeper learning opportunities for your students. Listeners of this podcast can get a free 60-day access to all of Defined Learning's projects and resources by going to definedlearning.com. Again, that's definedlearning.com/creativeclassroom. One word, definedlearning.com/creativeclassroom. One word. That's definedlearning.com/creativeclassroom. All right, so let's take a deep dive into this topic. Today we're going to be talking about something I care a lot about. It's this sense of fatigue that we're all experiencing and what that means in relation to this idea of student-centered learning. So let's take a dive into that idea. It's been quite a year so far in American education. If you're not in the US, just bear with me for a second. What you need to understand is that between school board battles over critical race theory to protests over mask mandates, we are seeing significant social strife playing out in the context of our schools. We're seeing bus drivers and cafeteria worker shortages. Meanwhile, the substitute teacher shortage has been a significant problem. And we've already seen it before that there's often a struggle to get subs who can come in and teach. But during this time of the pandemic, it has grown exponentially. Now, I get it. We anticipated some of this. But some of these moments have really caught us off guard. A former teacher that I used to work with texted me the other day noting, "I knew this year would be a challenge. I knew it would be tough to enforce the mask mandates with eighth graders. I get it. But I did not have the kids stole our soap dispensers because of a TikTok challenge on my pandemic teacher bingo card. This teacher is frustrated and is struggling. And the thing is, she is a phenomenal teacher." Now, teaching has always been a tiring profession. At every level, teachers pour their hearts and their souls into the craft. But this year feels different. Teachers started experiencing that December level or even May level teacher tired in mid-December. It's no surprise then that so many teachers are saying things like, "I can't do anything new right now. I can't try another innovative approach. I can't pivot. I'm all pivoted out." I want to recognize this reality that things are hard. Teaching is hard right now, and teachers are tired. For what it's worth, I'm exhausted right now. I'm a professor. I'm teaching at the university level. I get it. It's a little bit different. And for what it's worth, I'm eating right, I'm exercising, I'm going to bed at a decent time. However, life is a little bit chaotic right now. Yesterday, my daughter had shortness of breath right before PE. And in previous years, we would have said this was allergy-induced asthma that hits every single fall. But this year, it meant that she had to have a COVID test and be 24 hours symptoms-free afterwards. My wife and I are helping our daughter navigate the challenges of the first year of middle school, and we're helping our middle son, Micah, with his first year of high school. And meanwhile, my oldest son is exploring college opportunities and things like prospect camps and showcases for baseball. Things have been chaotic. In the meantime, I'm teaching 8 classes this semester, and I've worked with a few colleagues on shifting toward using Canvas for our LMS. I'm also leading professional development. I've been doing a lot of that, leading keynotes, doing workshops, creating content, and you know, doing this, doing a blog post and a podcast. And I want to be clear, I don't feel overwhelmed or even all that stressed by my daily schedule. I'm not burned out in my work. In fact, I love being a dad and a husband and a professor and an author and a speaker. I am, however, tired, really tired at the end of each day. The main culprit for me is something called decision fatigue. When a person makes too many decisions, they often have a reduction in the quality of their decisions over time. The sheer number of decisions and challenges in making tough choices can lead to this sense of exhaustion. And when this occurs, people are more likely to avoid making decisions. It can become harder to self-regulate. They become more impulsive. In fact, there's a lot of people who deliberately reduce the number of decisions they make. This is part of why Steve Jobs wore the same, awful black, turtleneck every single day, right? It's why Barack Obama had people pick out his suits for him so he didn't have to make that decision. It makes sense. You reduce the number of decisions so you can spend more mental energy on the decisions that matter. But for teachers, we work in a profession packed with decisions. This is part of why so many teachers crash at the end of the day. They're simply drained by the sheer number of intentional decisions that they have to make. While veteran teachers have routines and skills that have become automatic, new teachers are learning these skills for the first time. There's no muscle memory that can kick in. But now, amid the pandemic, many teachers are feeling like new teachers all over again. And you know, with the context changing so rapidly, it's hard to plan in advance or create any kind of predictable routines. I'm leaving most in-person classes right now feeling tired. And this is because I'm constantly having to modify a typical face-to-face activity for social distancing. A simple gallery walk or Socratic seminar now requires a new set of routines and decisions in advance, and then modifications in the moment. It is challenging. In some cases, teachers aren't just feeling decision fatigue, though. What they're feeling is cognitive overload. This occurs when the working memory that you're experiencing cannot keep up with new information, when there's sensory overload, any of that kind of stuff is in the area of cognitive overload. Now, for students, cognitive overload might occur when a teacher has given too much information in direct instruction without allowing for students to summarize, discuss, commit it to long-term memory. But it also happens when introducing too many new ideas or giving directions with too many steps, and many teachers are feeling this cognitive overload as educators. They're facing a very heavy cognitive load. They're learning new skills and are faced with all kinds of new challenges. Many teachers are stuck in a situation where they have to multitask, which is really split tasking, moving back and forth between tasks. And this can create the split attention effect, where a teacher isn't truly able to engage in any kind of meaningful deep work. Meanwhile, a teacher who is teaching in a hybrid model with students in person and at home faces an even heavier cognitive load because of the need to switch back and forth between virtual and in-person student populations. Many teachers are not just feeling the cognitive overload, they're also feeling something called change fatigue. While decision fatigue involves the challenges of making too many decisions, change fatigue often occurs when an institution implements too many systemic and structural changes in a given time without getting input from the people involved. This is what happens when a teacher says, "I'm all pivoted out." That's what they mean. Change fatigue, no more change. Often change fatigue leads to apathy and resignation. It can lead to stress, to fear, and to, yes, burnout. So many teachers right now are facing change fatigue. It's why they brace against terms like disrupting education or the calls to use this time to reimagine learning for our students. No more disrupting, no more reimagining. They just want for a moment some level of normalcy. They miss the fist bumps and the high fives and the facial expressions and the normal Socratic seminars and the gallery walks and the things that they did that were meaningful to them. In some cases, the issues go beyond fatigue, though. Some teachers are facing vicarious trauma, and some teachers are facing true trauma. And I'm gonna say I have nothing to say about trauma. I'm not an expert in this. But I wanna point out that if you are in this place where you are experiencing trauma, please seek out professional help. I can tell you that it has been really helpful for me throughout my life to go talk to a professional therapist. It's actually a sign of strength and humility to go to a licensed professional that you can see and to allow that person to help you process and to heal. Now, I mentioned that I'm experiencing decision fatigue, and I know that my next step is to rethink some of my commitments and to ask for some help along the way. For me, it's not as simple as taking a day off or doing less. It's more about the type of tasks that I do and the cognitive demands on the tasks that I'm doing. I don't need a bunch of extra free time right now. I don't need to drastically rethink my schedule. And I'm not looking for a ton of support. I just realize, hey, I'm hitting a little bit of decision fatigue and I need to make sense out of this. But other people need a lot more. I really think that there is no one-size-fits-all preventing burnout or dealing with fatigue. It's not as simple as taking a day off or focusing on self-care or choosing to stay positive. Some of that might work for some people, but not for all people. I've mentioned this before on this podcast, but I have this continuum of what teachers need. Do they need rest, recovery, restoration, or rehabilitation? Rest is, I need a break, but I'm also ready to learn. Recovery says, I need a longer break and deeper processing. Restoration says something was taken from me and I need you to change that system and that culture and support me in this moment. And rehabilitation says, I am hurting. I am burning out. I need healing. I am facing trauma. I need therapy to recover from this year and to continue. For all the talk of doing anything it takes to reach students, I think it's important that we as educators consider what we actually need right now. Self-care is student care. We can't provide for students if we are depleted on our own. But self-care can't be something that we find on the spare time. We need to tackle larger cultural narratives and experience significant systems changes. You can't say to a teacher, don't forget about self-care, and then ask that same teachers to take on 27 extra students when there is no substitute teacher. That isn't an issue of self-care. That's a broken system that needs to be fixed. But I also think it's important that we recognize the danger in certain narratives that come from our culture. See, there's a powerful narrative in our culture that the best teachers are the ones who work the longest hours and who go the extra mile and who will do anything and everything for students, no matter what. We see this in pop cultures with movies like Stand and Deliver or Dangerous Minds. And often there's a touch of kind of white savior complex mixed into it. It's the notion that the best teachers are the ones coming in and saving the world. It's the belief that you have to be the best at all times. You have to be the glorious, brave teachers that you see in the movie, that you need to suffer in order to make a difference, but I don't buy it. The truth is that we don't need to be saviors and superheroes and martyrs. Students don't need Superman, they need Clark Kent. They need someone who is humble and grounded and approachable and someone who can be themselves. You know, the truth is, we need rest. We need a chance to recharge. This isn't a selfish act. It's the notion that self-care is student care. Students need teachers who have patience and energy. And guess what? That requires us to take care of ourselves. Choosing to recharge isn't a self-act. It's what will benefit your students and benefit the people around you. I love this suggestion from Joan Young, who once said that we should rephrase it from self-care to taking care of ourselves. This treats it less like a luxury and more like a necessity. But I would suggest that we take it a step further and instead of saying self-care, say caring for teachers. Because it's not merely a personal decision. Teachers need professional autonomy and a sense of agency. We need to trust teachers to innovate in their practice. We need to honor their professional expertise. And yes, we need systemic support for educators. Teachers need prep time to do their jobs and instead of spending that time covering classes because there are no subs. If a teacher doesn't get a break, then they are the ones who break. Teachers need reasonable class sizes. They need support with behavioral interventions. We need to stop pretending that the trauma that students aren't, that they've experienced isn't affecting daily life in the classroom. I have seen so many amazing teachers say, I don't know what to deal with some of the behaviors I'm seeing. And that is the result of trauma from the pandemic. And I mention all of this because I often talk on this podcast about empowering students with voice and choice. I tend to focus on how this will help develop soft skills in our students. But the truth is, I actually think that this can benefit educators as well. If we think about the role of self-assessment and peer assessment, when they engage in self-assessment and peer assessment, it actually frees you up as a teacher to have one-on-one conferences with students and to give more meaningful feedback on student work. You're able to take the assessment load off your back and ask students to do more of the mental work involved in the assessment process. When students get the chance to choose topics and do choice menus or geek out blogs or genius hour projects, it potentially reduces your own cognitive load as an educator and helps prevent decision fatigue. In the meantime, it helps boost student engagement and makes the job more enjoyable for you. If we think about something like the geek out blogs that students do, they choose the topics, they find the resources, they engage in the research, they ultimately craft the blog posts. And what this does for you as an educator is it frees you up to do things like mini workshops and small group instruction. When students ask their own questions, I spend less time coming up with my own questions. So if students are doing a Socratic seminar, I might prepare the class with some resources to look at and some reading to do, and maybe I'll structure the Socratic seminar, but they will own the discussion. They ask the questions, they share their insights, they navigate the discussion, and I am merely a referee stepping in only when necessary. And I'm telling you, during some of those Socratic seminars, it is refreshing to not be on, to be watching and to be listening and to be present, but not have to feel like it's about me. If students engage in an inquiry-based mini project, they are the ones who ask the questions and find the answers and share their insights with others. Again, that's the idea of student ownership. If they own the project management process, you as a teacher spend less time tracking student progress, sending email reminders, managing the systems. Instead, the burden is on the project manager within each group. They can help their group facilitate every part of this project management process. When students learn how to self-select scaffolds, differentiation becomes simpler and more feasible. It's less time-consuming and energy-draining because students learn how to find the tools that they need. This is the idea of UDL. It's the notion of neurodiversity. It's the idea of making things universally accessible to all students and letting them self-select the scaffolds that they need. And what that does is it makes it less of a cognitive demand on you. When students engage in PBL, you spend less time preparing slideshows and materials for class. In my experience, the act of teaching feels more relaxed because I'm not having to be on all the time. I spend less time engaging in direct instruction and less time redirecting negative behaviors. This helps me thrive as an introverted educator. Now, 16 years ago, when I first shifted toward empowering students, I asked the question, what am I doing for students that they could be doing for themselves? And my focus was on students. But I noticed something else. The more I empowered students, the less exhausted I became. Now, I shared this idea with a colleague at the time who said, of course you're less tired. They're doing all the work. And you know what? She was right. Now, sort of right. This wasn't entirely true. I built so many systems used for empowering students. I was actively monitoring their learning. I still pulled small groups and did intervention. And yes, I still did direct instruction. But the truth is, I was less exhausted because I no longer had to own every part of the learning process. Going student-centered actually freed me up as a teacher to do more of the work that I love to do. And I think that's really significant. Now, I mention all of this because a few weeks ago I led a training, and it was this training that I sometimes do called the Blueprint for Empowering Students. I began with the disclaimer that my goal was to affirm teachers in what they were doing, rather than asking them to radically change their practice. And it was going pretty well. But at one point in the workshop, a teacher said, I love these ideas and I'm on board with what you're talking about, but I don't know where to start. You've already started, I told him. What do you mean? He asked. And at that point, together, I had everyone brainstorm the ways that they were already empowering students. They started with individual brainstorms and then moved to small group brainstorms and discussions. We then reconvened as a group, and I asked, where have you already started? What are you already doing? How can you build on these things? And I was blown away by the work that they were doing. And I think it's important that we recognize that innovation doesn't have to be a giant leap into the unknown. It doesn't have to be something bold and flashy and new. It's often about making small tweaks that yield big results. It's about experimenting through little iterations over time and building momentum. It's about the overlap between best practices and next practices. It's about small iterations. It's about little experiments. Now, I want to point out that none of this happens unless teachers feel supported and empowered as well. I am sympathetic toward building level administrators. This has been a really stressful and challenging year. I get it. But I also know that as an educator, I am far more likely to empower my students when I feel empowered by my leadership. That was true at the middle school level, it's true at the higher education level. So I think it's important that we give teachers the resources that they need. It's important that we de-emphasize the role of standardized testing. It's important that teachers are allowed to own their professional development and make choices about what they're going to do. It's important that we give them the curriculum that they need, but then we give them the freedom and the autonomy to modify that curriculum and to go with what they think is best. It's important that we design school-wide structures that will build student ownership across the grade level and subject areas. In the end, I truly believe that empowered teachers empower students. And I believe that when we shift toward a student-centered approach, we are more likely to find the rest and restoration that we need as educators. Hey, thank you so much for listening. Would you do me a favor? If you enjoy this podcast, would you leave a review on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher or wherever you get your podcasts? Again, thank you so much for listening. Have a wonderful day and go out and make something awesome.